If all those aggregations of people who have long believed that they stood for this ideal would now try to make peace with one another, if they would acknowledge the ideals of one another, however much the working plans of those ideals may differ, a force could even now be set in motion that would shorten this war and lessen the number of those who must die for their conflicting ideals of national honor and loyalty. In the reaction from hate to love, in the reaction from criticism to understanding that will follow a formal declaration of peace, all those quarreling spiritual organizations may, if they will, begin to work harmoniously. If their members cannot bring themselves, because of their narrow pride and the memory of all the harsh things which they have said against one another in the past, if they are too meanly afraid of eating their words, publicly to acknowledge one another as brethren, let them begin to feel thus in their hearts. Perhaps in time the greater courage will come, and some daring leader will say to his flock that those with whom they once worked, with trust and the profession of love, may be trying, according to their lights, to serve the ideal. I do not know that any further elaboration of this idea would make it any clearer to you, and these remarks are only an interlude, a relief, in the tension of the story which I have to tell you. March 13th. Letter V, Astral Monsters. Did you know that I was near you when you crossed the North Sea more than 2 weeks before war was declared, crossed to England under an irresistible, an overwhelming impulse to get away from the continent of Europe and back to the people of your own blood? I was near you. But I did not remain when you were safe with your friends. I returned to the center of war determinism, went back to that land which, despite all protestations to the contrary, hatched out the egg which an irresponsible bird had laid in the region farther south. Did I say irresponsible? Only a madman is irresponsible for his acts. Let me say rather deluded, for not all deluded souls are mad. The hand that slew the Austrian Archduke was used, as others have been used, by the forces working against progress. Pity that man also, and let the law of cause and effect deal with him as it must, for there is no favoritism in that court and no appeal to a higher jurisdiction. I returned to Germany. It will be necessary in this writing to call spades, spades. If I hurt anybody's feelings, I am not writing to hurt anybody's feelings. Facts are facts, and no specious pleading can change them. I returned to Germany. I listened to war councils. I heard orders given, for by a special hardening of my astral ears I can hear what is spoken in the world of men and hear very distinctly. My astral body is a well-lubricated though tenuous machine that answers to the lightest touch of my will. But do not jump to the conclusion that all astral bodies are like mine. Remember that I am the pupil of a great master, and that his purposes are not his purposes but those of the law of progress which he serves. I saw again the monster of which I wrote you in my second letter. They speak truth who say that the German emperor did hesitate to touch the spring which should open the doors of hell. The warlord had a certain pride in his record as a peace lord, and he shivered at the responsibility that faced him while gloating in that responsibility, which further exalted his already self-exalted ego. Pity him too, but do not sentimentalize over him. Will is free. In yielding his will to the evil genius he was exercising free will. But those eyes of his were wet in the night and he did pray to the force he calls his God. The name of God was not only on his lips but in his inner thoughts. God is a word that means many things to many persons. There was also in that conclave of evil spirits many who were not attached to individual men. There were vast elemental beings. When Lytton wrote, in one of his occult novels, of a gigantic foot which stepped through a gap in the magic circle drawn by a black magician in the primeval wilderness, he referred to a fact in nature. Nature. You with your narrow sight have no idea of the meaning of the term. All your studies have not taught you even the alphabet that nature uses. Learn that alphabet. Begin to study that language. Study chemistry, biology, electricity, and study the mysteries of the vibrations of matter on as many planes as you can consciously reach. The knowledge of the future lies there. Man has only begun the conquest of nature. Any expression of hate which you ever beheld in the material world was only a weak replica of the hate that was let loose upon the Earth when the hour struck last year, the hour when the orbits of certain planetary bodies blended their influences and allowed a free passage for beings who are generally more limited in their freedom of movement. The giant foot. I saw the great being to whom such a foot belonged. It was a being of the air, but earth beings were allied with it and monsters from the deeper circles of matter where the light of the sun never shines. Will you let me describe one of those beings? You need not fear it now, for it has been driven back to its lair in the bowels of the planet. A gross bluish bag-like body, with a long fat tail covered with bristles, arms and legs like elongated bags, and a head that was a larger and half-submerged bag in the rolls of its monstrous neck. But the eyes. There was no fat-like substance within them. They were wide and round and glaring with 1,000 years of malignity concentrated in a moment. Pale eyes they were. If you dread an evil dark eye, dread more an evil pale eye. Suffering unimaginable and hate of everything above it were expressed in the eyes of that entity from the deep of things which from the lowest astral plane spat and drooled its venom toward the surface of the planet. Immense it was in size, toothless and shapeless its mouth. What the nourishment might be which had kept it together I refrain from telling you. Again I say, do not dread it. It cannot reach toward the surface of the earth now. Its existence is near its term. But the germs of astral disease which were spewed from its shapeless mouth have been multiplying in spite of all the efforts of those who know how to cope with such things. The beings of the air are not filthy, however evil they may be, and few of them are really evil, few in proportion to those who are amiable or indifferent to man. The more revengeful of the beings of fire may yet make themselves felt, for sporadic efforts will still be made, though the great struggle is one in the invisible regions. Stay where you are for the time. A danger still threatens Europe beyond the danger of armies. Wait, and pray. For prayer is an astral force and its effects, being in the higher astral, are far-reaching. Wait, and pray. March 15th. Letter I. The Archduke. Have you ever thought of the posthumous feelings of him whose murder precipitated this war? No, you have not, but I have, and I sought for him and found him. Others were seeking him too, the souls of the dead and the astral souls of those who slept on earth. Truly his was not a peaceful passing, either in flesh or in spirit. The dread of assassination which had long hung over him like a dark cloud predisposed him to a dark and stormy period after death, even if he had not been shocked out by the murderous assault. This was another illustration of that law by which the thing we fear attacks us sooner or later. At first he passed into darkness and a period of somnolence, like a vague nightmare, then as he gradually awoke to a more vivid consciousness he awoke with pain and anxiety and wailing of soul. The dreaded thing had come at last, and he knew that he was outside his body and searched for it. The customary funeral was even more dismal for him than it is for most souls, because the slight opening of vision which his passing had given made him realize that far more than his personal death was bound up with this change. He was not attacked by the evil things which had brought about his death. What more could they want with him? He had served their purposes. Had there been anyone else round whose murder so much obscurity and so complex a series of misunderstandings and suspicions could have gathered, probably that other man would have suffered in his stead. But whose murder could have served that purpose so well as this man's? Whose relations placed him in such a focus of rays? His relations with the German Emperor, the relations of his family with those for whom he had no sympathy, the relations of the present heir with Russia, all these and many other sources of error and doubt and confusion formed an ideal center of tumult. And the soul felt this tumult in addition to his anger and disappointment at being driven from the world. His anxiety for his children was not small, for they stood in a peculiar position regarding the families around them. Imagine the thought of every man, woman and child capable of following an event like that, centered on one soul, in anger, love, grief, curiosity, doubt, uncertainty, every mind in almost every country of the world. It was enough to shatter his astral body altogether. Generally, when a ruler dies, he is followed by loving thoughts, or thoughts of dislike, but not by confusing thoughts. His race is run. The king is dead. Long live the king. For some time, this heir to a great throne was even driven away from the companion whom he loved. He had nothing to lean on. He was drawn upon and victimized by thoughts, 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 from all directions and in all stages of intensity. Even the prayers offered for the repose of his soul in purgatory had not the effect which such prayers of love generally have. They were only a drop in the river of thoughts which rushed in his direction. Yes, I say in his direction, for he remained a long time in that storm center of thoughts. Even the band of helpers, of whom I told you when I wrote for the world before, were not able to assist him very much, for they too were attacked by the beings of evil who made war in the astral regions. As a rule, the death of one man makes little difference to the world. Those who love him grieve, and those who dislike him or who profit by his death are glad. This man went out with the flaming torch of war in his vapory hand. After a time he sought and found his friend, the ruler of Germany, but that ruler could not see him, though he sensed a presence in the room. He was half afraid. What was the presence? He wondered. Was it his own genius? Did it come to remind him that the hour of his great destiny was at hand? The hesitation of his weakness was rather shameful to see, but the determination of his strength, of his evil self, set its heel upon the weakness, and the preparations for war went on. The soul of the Archduke was too confused to play a part in those councils. He had been a strong man, and will be strong again, but during the time he might have exercised an invisible influence, he exercised none. He strove to make himself visible, and in one instance at least succeeded. Yes, I spoke with him and advised him, but I had other things to do just then and left him with a priest of his own church, a gentle and strong soul who stood like a rock in the tumult. I only mention my seeing the Archduke because of one who will someday read these lines. I cannot offer much comfort, but she will be glad to know of the strong and quiet priest, and I shall have kept a promise which I made but have so far been unable to keep in any way save this. March 17. Letter 7, The Chosen People. The nations began to declare war on one another. I stood with 20 others for hours in the palace at Potsdam, trying by the silent pressure of will to reduce the pressure of the war will which surged in the German nation toward its emperor. And they say that Germany did not want war. Der Tag seemed near, and war seemed to mean triumph. It is a commonplace to say now that Germany believed that England could not go to war. And had England not gone to war, the issue would have been settled before the date of this writing. The German navy would have met the French in battle and would have worsted it. It would be well for you to cease shrinking when I say what does not please you. I state what I know, you merely write down what I say. I and 20 others centered the force of our will in Potsdam and in the Wilhelmstrasse. Not that we did not know what the issue would be. We knew. This war was written in the stars. But as the soldier does his duty though he knows that he will lose the day, so we stood our ground against the war devils. The greatest of the masters did not stand there with us, and I do not know where he was. Probably on some business that we might not have understood. Perhaps holding back worse forces from the outer stars. No, that is not a dream, though it is only a supposition. There is evil as well as good in the outer stars. Had it not been for the restraining influence of those who watched up here, many of the foreigners in Germany at that time would have been torn limb from limb. What do you know of war madness, hate madness? Were you capable of feeling it in your present personality, you could not write for me now, while those whom you love and respect are nearly all on one side of a war not yet finished. You may grasp hate intellectually, you may dramatize it, but you do not feel it, though you have suffered from its effects. The worst in the German heart is very bad, though I tell you not to hate them. The worst in all people is very bad, but the German is the greatest bully on the planet. The cruel Oriental races have a restraint which has grown in them through ages of culture. The German knows only the restraint of the German law, he respects only the restraint of the German law. He has no sense of right and wrong in the abstract, though he is often extremely sensitive as to what is right and wrong for him in his relation to those near him, his kinsmen and fellow citizens. But those outside the race group are outside his code of honor, however polished he may be. I am speaking now of the race, not of the few who have by long residence abroad absorbed somewhat of world brotherhood and the more delicate sensibilities of international relations. And mark this also, the German can love as thoroughly as he can hate, but he can love only his own, something which is an extension of himself, a secondary ego, the me in another form. A German may love a foreign wife, if he can Germanize her. A German may love a foreign friend, if that friend does not stand in the way of something he wants for himself. I am not referring to those sudden outpourings of emotion to which those emotional people are subject. I am not referring to their surface kindliness, which is the overflow of emotion. And still I say, love these unlovable people, love them so much that they will be detached from their race center and will flow out in melting response to everything that is not German. The world can never really soften the German shell by throwing stones against it. When they break down in this war, they will not be any more essentially lovable because they are weaker. Love them by trying to understand them. It will take decades for the arrogant and self-exalting German to see that there is anything outside that may be superior to what is inside his shell. He respects only might. He must be conquered by might. From his enforced respect of a superior might he may be led gradually to see the superior right of that gentleness which does not use its might to coerce him when further coercion is unnecessary. I have stood in German households since the war began, I have entered into and for the time being have become German men and German women, and I understand them and love them. I even admire them, for their devotion to their own is immense. Once let that strength go out in real brotherhood to all mankind, and these people would be truly great. Is it possible? All things are possible to the human soul, and these people are very human. The defect is in their vaunted education. They teach themselves that they are the chosen people. When they learn that they are not the chosen people in war, the very force of the shock may upset the pillar of egotism that stands upright in the center of the German soul. The world should not let that pillar fall with a crash, but softly ease the blow, not too softly, lest mercy be mistaken for war weariness. The world mother has a hard and erring child. It has to be punished, but not refused a seat at the family table. I have said these things to you because, if you do not shrink, I have things to tell you in my next letter which will need fortitude for you to receive, fortitude and charity, whose other name is love. March 24th. Letter 8, Spectres of the Congo. I have been in Poland and I have been in Serbia, but now am I wont to write of Belgium and of Karma, race Karma, Karma old and new. With and behind the invading Germans, urging them on to murder, pillage and destruction, rape and burning, were not only the devils from the outer vast, whose time for activity had come, but with and behind the German army was a horde of undeveloped and earth-bound spirits who had suffered in the Congo. Karma, always karma. The world knows something about what has been done in Belgium, something of what Germans have done there. I have seen men, women, and little children murdered in cold blood. I have witnessed the soul of a murdered man tearing at a soldier who was violating the murdered man's wife. I have seen the soul of a mother wringing her hands as she would have wrung them on earth when her little daughter was being maltreated by brutes who were blind with madness. An old man out here followed a soldier for days until he saw revenge accomplished by means of a Belgian bayonet, then as the German soul came out he grappled with it again, and the two were torn by each other, the soldier not knowing he had left the body and feeling that he was at grips with an enemy still on earth. There was much of what is called voodoo in the Congo. Its practitioners do not go to sleep for a long time. They go on and on in the invisible world, making their evil preparations and weaving their spells. they gather round spilled blood, they absorb vitality from it, and that vitality they use to bring evil and death upon anything toward which they direct their will. Did you fancy that will was weakened when man lays aside the brain? It is weakened in the sense that there is less freedom of choice, but there is tremendous will in following a choice already set up when the physical base of the brain was attached to the will. But now all the evil karma of Belgium is lived out, and she stands like a new soul in the face of time. Another race has taken up the load that she laid down. Will that too be expended soon, or late? Germany has woven round herself a shirt of evil causes that will cling to her and chafe her flesh for generations. It must needs be that offences come, but woe to that man by whom the offence cometh. The karma of nations is known to the masters and adepts. The karma of England. Have you ever thought about the karma of England? Granting that she has done much wrong, as all old nations have, yet she has allowed herself to be used by the world will. She, more than all the other old races, has been an instrument in the unifying of the races. Did you fancy that the British Empire was a fortuitous concourse of atoms? Did you think the British Empire merely happened? And now the British Empire may be used further. She may be used in Belgium. And I do not mean the mere presence of her army in Belgium. It is said that the masters, the world's teachers, hold back the awful karma of the world. I am trying to do a little of holding back the awful karma of Germany. She has disgraced the human race in Belgium. Everything that has been believed about German outrages in Belgium is true except one thing. So far as I know, and I have inquired of those who know more than I, German soldiers have not cut off the hands of living Belgian children. But they have murdered women, and outraged women, and mocked and insulted pregnant women, and maltreated the new-made mothers of babes that they have murdered. They have burned men alive, and they have buried men still alive. I say that Germans have done these things. Should I say that the forces of evil, the beings of evil, the superhuman and the once human forces of evil, have done these things, using as their instruments the forms of German soldiers from which they had thrust for the moment the moral soul? Take it whichever way you may please, for both ways are true. The men who ravaged and destroyed Belgium were not all obsessed, save that evil may be always an obsession. Help to hold back the awful karma that Germany has made in Belgium. Ye have heard that it hath been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them that despitefully use you, and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father who is in heaven. March 27th. Letter 9. Unseen Guardians. In the devastated region of Belgium, and most of Belgium is devastated, there stands a little house unharmed and tranquil as before the war. Round about it are ruined walls, standing black with smoke or grey with the powder of shell fire. Two women live there, middle-aged women. They did not flee their home when the war tide washed over them. They were frightened, yes, but they did not flee. They saw neighbouring houses in flames, they heard the detonation of shells bursting, but they remained between their four thin walls, and waited and prayed. Four gods they prayed to, God the Father and God the Son, and two others, their father and mother, who had passed on some years before into the other world, their Belgian father and their German mother. So great was their faith that they believed they would be unharmed, and they were not harmed. Incredible as it may seem, that little house stands thus secure in the midst of desolation. Love is a protective force. The father and mother of those two middle-aged women had loved each other tenderly. Race was no barrier to their love. The German woman and the Belgian man had taught their children that Germany was their mother and Belgium was their father. Their bones lie together in the village churchyard, and their souls kept watch when the armies passed over. They guarded the children they loved. Does this seem an impossible story? I know it to be a fact. I have spoken with it father and mother, and I shall speak with them again. Their faith is rare, and their love is rare, and their reward has been rare. It is easier to guard a little house than to move a mountain, and it has been said that faith like a grain of mustard seed could move a mountain. Those two souls had not yet passed away from the neighborhood of the earth, they waited for their children. When the war tide rolled over, they stood guard at the doorstone of their home. The spirits of the peaceful dead do not like the sound of shells, but these two did not fly away. Had they been frightened from their vigil, the little house might now be like its neighbors. Am I over-credulous? Do you remember me telling you one day years ago that you were not credulous enough? I see that you remember. These two, the Belgian father and the German mother, were also credulous, as the world uses the word, and their children were credulous, too. Had the nations been equally credulous of the power of love, there would have been no war, for there would have been no armies to make war. I am not preaching against armies. I am only preaching love and faith. When love and faith grow greater, armies will grow smaller, and war will be at an end. I asked the Belgian father how he felt about the war, and he looked toward his German wife. I asked the German mother how she felt about the war, and she looked toward her Belgian husband. Neither would speak for fear of wounding the other. How should I feel now if my nation were at war, you wonder? But since the eyes of my memory opened and I saw my past lives, I realize that I have had so many nations, have fought in so many armies, have lain in the lap of so many mothers of mine in so many lands, that my spirit is uprooted. I have joined the Great White Brotherhood, to which all men are brothers and all women sisters. It would be difficult for you to see with my eyes. I watch and wait, like the parents of the two old maids in Belgium. And so far the house of my faith stands untouched by the fires of war. In the Great White Brotherhood there are members from many races, there are members from the races now at war. Do you fancy that they looked askance at one another when the world went mad? They did not look askance at one another. Each stood guard where he could do the most good. Each sought to soften the blow to the brethren of his brother, each sought to soften the hearts of his own blood brethren. But as this war was written in the stars, the teachers of the world could not prevent it when the hour struck. Do you know what it means to be a member of the Great White Brotherhood? It means to work for the welfare of the human race, for the good of the planet as a whole. And there is another thing I want to tell you. You have heard of a Black Brotherhood. It is a misnomer. Brotherhood is never black. There is no Black Brotherhood. There are many Black Masters. For mastership, like a garment, may be either white or black. In this war the black forces who have inspired hatred in men have worked for one end, and that very fact will weaken their power to do evil for a long time, when the results of their present labors are over. Do you get my meaning? A combination of evil forces, in the very act of combining, weakens the individual power of its members, for evil is strongest when individual. Two who are full of love may work together with the power of four, but two who work together for evil have only the power of, shall I say, one and a half, and one and a half against four. If you love power, use power for good and increase it. It is because of the multitude of elementary evil forces, all hurling their malice at the world, not because of their combination, that this madness was made possible. Hate is a disintegrating force. Those who hate after this war will disintegrate themselves. Those who love after this war will grow strong. France especially will grow strong, because there is more love than hate in France. France loves so much that even her enemies do not hate her. It is not merely because she is not so brutally strong as her great enemy. Love your enemies. That is the surest way to overcome them. March 29th. Letter X. One day is a thousand years. As I am writing about war, I wish to talk to those who have lost their loved ones in this war. You who grieve for the untimely dead, have you not read that one day shall be as a thousand years and a thousand years as one day? We must start on the basis of rebirth, whose other name is rhythm, and whose course is immortality. Immortality presupposes no beginning and looks forward to no end. The spirit always was and always will be. In the life of the spirit, one day is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years are as one day. Birth is the morning of a new day, and death is the evening of that day, and the period between lives is the period of sleeping and dreaming. Or you may turn it the other way and say that life is a dream and death the awakening to reality. But the rhythm is sure. Falling asleep is a passing through the astral world, much as a soul passes through it after death. You who write for me, and a few others, pass through it in full consciousness.